you are an entrepreneur, a professional, a speaker, or a coach, and although you've come a long way, it's time for you to take it to the next level. We've got you. This is the Author to Authority Podcast. We'll help you use authority and influencer marketing to build your business stronger and faster by publishing a book. You'll hear from guests that are thought leaders in sales, marketing, networking, communication, social media, promotion, and business leadership. Let's do it. This is the Author to Authority Podcast.
And now your host, the extraordinary word ninja, Kim Thompson Pender.
Welcome to the Author to Authority Podcast. And today we're going to talk about something that we've never talked about on the podcast before. And we've done over 500 episodes. So you are going to want to stay tuned as we talk about TED style practices for authors. And I want to welcome Devin Marks to the show. He's one of the nation's leading TED style speaking coaches. He's called the TED Talk Whisperer by clients and media outlets. Devin has trained hundreds of speakers for TED, TEDx, and TED style talks, including Harvard's Dr. Robert Waldinger, for his breakaway talk, What Makes a Good Life, now clocking more than 47 million views. The spreadworthy ideas of Devin's clients are catalytic with hundreds of millions of worldwide views. Welcome to the show, Devin.
Oh, thank you so much, Kim. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So, you know, we decided to call it TED style practices. And so I guess first the big obvious question, I mean, we've all heard of TED Talks, but what is a TED style practice?
Well, you know, I like to say not everyone is going to give a TED Talk or a TEDx talk in their life and career, but TED Talks and that style, clearly focused, story wrapped, and action igniting, has changed the way we present. Whether for a keynote, even a podcast, much less an author signing tour.
Love it, love it, love it. I know we're going to dive deeper into that as we go along. I want to talk a little bit, though, about your story, because obviously there's things that have happened in your life that have led you to this moment, and I'd love to hear more about it.
Well, you know, people ask, how do you become a TED Talk whisperer? You know, for me, it was one of my clients came up with that and I disliked it. My wife and her family disliked it even more because they're horse whisperer people. But after it just kind of got picked up, the backstory, though, is where do you go to deconstruct TED Talks and understand why these ideas are so catalytic and spread so easily? I picked seminary. So I wasn't heading to a pulpit, but I was trying to understand why the secular church of ideas was producing sermons that were so viral. And we were able to, you know, work in a scientific, with a scientific research-based mindset to deconstruct TED Talks. And as I rounded the bend on that, it was more of an intellectual exercise. I didn't expect to be training speakers per se. I had been a, you know, recovering event organizer and conference designer in my past. And yet when we finished kind of the requirements for that seminary degree, which I never finished, to be candid, we moved to Boston as a family for my wife's career. And I had a little munchkin strapped on my chest because I knew three people in Boston, my wife, my daughter, and one professor up at a seminary up north of the city. And I thought I'd finish my degree with him. Went in for my informational meeting with my kiddo strapped on, and he said, I'm retiring next semester. You know, I was like, what am I doing here? But he said, you know, but we are organizing a conference in the fall, and we want to organize it with TED Talks. And voila, we were off and running. We decided to link arms, and I was able to bring these best practices of TED from my research and blend them with a conference in the TED style. And by that, I mean with a countdown clock, very rigorous time counts, with presentations that were more story-driven than data-driven. And the response to that was so enthusiastic. And my wife was so encouraged that, you know, the decision was, hey, let's train some speakers, not produce the events, because that's really stressful and a heavy lift, but let's just work with speakers. And the very next speaker I worked with was Dr. Robert Waldinger, whose name you pronounced correctly, and his breakaway TED Talk, which is now an all-time top 10 talk.
I love it. There's a couple of things there that you kind of said that just really grabbed my attention. And, you know, first of all, it's, you know, moving to a city where you know nobody. I did that in September of 2022. My husband retired from his 30 plus year job. He is re-careering and we moved across Canada.
Oh my, yeah.
To where we know nobody. So I hear you on that one, and I know what that is like. But, you know, one of the things that you shared there was the fact that you took an unusual approach to studying something, and you allowed that approach to help define you in ways that you didn't even realize.
Interesting. Yeah, that's it. That's very perceptive. That's so true. And, you know, what's the term? Oblique strategies sometimes sparks ideas for writers and TEDsters who want to form an idea. Those oblique strategies sometimes bring us to something from a different angle, and we see things with an aha set that is unique. And I suppose in retrospect, that's what happened for me. You know, of course, in that path, there are all sorts of other weaves to the cord of the story, right? One of my best friends and mentors happened to be an 80-year-old who used to be Billy Graham's driver and who married Billy Graham's secretary.
And I am so jealous.
Well, Lyman Coleman had been the young guy on the team back in the day, and he had done the advance work for the, you know, the events, the crusades running through towns. And then he would stay behind and work with the youth, because he was the young guy on the team. Well, when he first heard of TED, never seen a TED talk, watched his first talk, and he said, gosh, you know, that's a lot what Billy was doing back in the day. Now, I don't call Reverend Graham Billy, but Lyman can, because he babysat his kids. And again, there was that theme. He said, you know, these share in common, they're focused in a special way. And there are five levels that you focus a TED talk with. They're story wrapped or sticky stories. And then finally, there's a call to action that's igniting, that leads to practical next steps today or tonight or tomorrow, not next week, next month, or next year. And then, you know, you layer that insight set with the technology change that was happening at the time. YouTube was new, social media was new. And as Lyman said, just like television was new for pastors in his day. So, you know, they're serendipities is how Lyman would term it. These ahas that come to us when we're kind of open-handed and open-hearted, leaning into something new.
Okay, so I am completely jealous, because to drive Billy Graham around would be like an ultimate dream of mine. Just to talk to the man would be like to have a conversation. Obviously, that's going to have to wait till I'm in glory with him.
Sure. Well, I only talk to the man who talked to the man.
But you know what? There's so much that you can learn from talking to the people who knew the people, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the perceptions that they have are just as valuable sometimes as talking to the person, because they can add something to it that other people never got to see.
Very perceptive, ever so true. When I think back to that first event, the TED Style Conference that Dr. David Gill was organizing, it was a faith at work summit, right? So a lot of theologians, a lot of heads of centers of faith and work in the marketplace, a lot of authors, and very polished and experienced pastors, right? With, you know, audiences of 1,000 or 10,000, whatnot. But as I introduced the TED tools, right, I pulled out of the TED tool shed a handful of tools, and we started using them to prep those speakers. One of the unexpected serendipities was Tom Nelson, one of the biggest names in that space, said, this has reshaped my whole understanding of story and how I share, not only from scripture, but from my life and my personal experience with an audience, which of course is a very, very TED sort of thing, right? Not an overshare that's TMI, you know, but it's a personal experience that is relatable for the audience. And we latch onto those naturally as audience members. When our pastor or our expert at the National Association of this, that, and the other begin sharing.
You know what I found funny about what you just said is this is supposed to be, you know, your faith at work, and all the speakers are like pastors, and I'm like, I'd like to see a few entrepreneurs in there, and
right.
few Christian managers, and maybe some Christian
singers. You know what, I give short shrift. They had a good mix in there. Cheryl Brody, and I'm butchering her last name, owns one of the largest apple orchards in the nation. And she came from the workplace, the marketplace, to share her insight set. Let's see, John Beckett, who owns one of the three top industrial furnace part operations in the nation, was there to share from his experience. So too, the former CEO of ServiceMaster. And a lady who'd make cupcakes. So, you know, that wide range of work experience was present. But yeah, it tended also to be a kind of heady, pastor-heavy audience that first year. They produced that event a number of years. It's actually going to be produced again this year for the first time since COVID. And again, a wide range of researchers and pastors and authors, but also marketplace experienced veterans who have some insights to share and yet want to do it in 15 minutes or under, right?
That is really cool. So when and where is that being held?
Let me think. Dallas, I think, is the fall event that was just announced a few months ago.
Nice. Love it. Love it. Audience, we are going to take a quick commercial break here. RTI Publishing has some wonderful things going on. And so I've got a quick ad for you about something that's really going to help you take your business forward and be able to write a book that converts readers into clients. We will be right back. Writing and publishing a book that converts readers into clients and scales your business is hard, but it doesn't have to be. Get my free checklist at bit.ly/create-and-scale that will show you what you need to do to have your book become a well-converting lead generating tool. Devin, I think we could probably talk about your story for the whole entire show, because I think you've got some fascinating things there. But, you know, you talked about in your story the five focuses. Yes. And like that just got me really intrigued. I think, you know, especially when you're an author, when you're trying to talk about your book, like, and I think in this case, let's be realistic, nonfiction author, not necessarily fiction, because that's a whole different genre. Sure. But, you know, when you're looking at nonfiction, when you're looking at books that you're using to promote yourself, your business, your brand, you know, how do you take all that and distill that down into a TED Talk? So, you know, those five focuses, I'm just really curious now.
Good question. And of course, I'm going to take a moment to just pull up so I'm not winging it entirely. Now, when you're working on a TED Talk or a big idea, you need that big idea honed down, right? And so we call that the through line or the thread, if you will. That can't be 400 words. It needs to get distilled from that. But we start with 400 words, even 800 words sometimes, and begin refining and tooling it down through a six-step process, one of which is redrafting it tighter and tighter from 400 to 200 to 100 to 50 to 25. Now, you're thinking to yourself, well, I know where we're going. Why don't we just start with 10 words, right? But what that distillation process does is it allows stuff to bubble up and find its way to the page that wasn't necessarily going to be in that first draft. And I can come along as a coach and begin catching up with the thought process of an author or a speaker and ask about these little glowing ahas that stand out to me. Why shouldn't this be included in the core of the big idea. Now, let me just give you a few examples from the land of TED. Dr. Robert Waldinger's breakaway talk, as you said, 47 million views now, the largest research set of its kind in the world. He is a researcher who looks at health and happiness in the lives of men and families at Harvard. And it's an 80-year longitudinal study. So they followed a cohort of men through the whole of their lives, measured everything in the world, their height, their temperament, their body weight, et cetera. And then they interviewed the wives and children and began following those individuals. But his through line, the good life is built with good relationships. Not one data point in that. The good life is built with good relationships. Sounds like common sense, but it's uncommonly applied. But because it's common sense in simple language, we can share it. We can, I can explain it to you. You can explain it to your spouse, and your spouse can, and that's how something spreads, right?
And the wife goes, amen.
Yeah. You know, another very popular TED talk, top 10, is Simon Sinek's talk. He's the why guy, right? People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Well, tell me about this how what, but also tell me about the why. Just like Dr. Waldinger's, tell me about the good life. How do you build it? And, you know, what is it, right? Those types of through lines represent weeks, if not months, of refinement. And, of course, a hidden factor in prepping a TED Talk is you're always practicing it.
Yes.
It's a 15-minute talk. It's 0 to 15 minutes with your Starbucks barista. Then it's 0 to 15 minutes with your next-door neighbor. 0 to 15 minutes with that class you teach once a month, etc. You try and get 50 to 75 to more live, full-on practice sessions. And when you do, if you're an author, think about the conversations you're having. As you do, feedback loops begin, right? And that begins to tweak and refine just a little bit a word or a phrase or a clause of that through line. Now, that's a lot. Let me step back and go, okay, you know, fivefold focus, the big idea. That's the first step. The second step is undergird that big idea with what we call the rule of three. Because research shows we're not going to remember 7, 17, and 27 things. We're going to remember five or fewer is the research, where the research points. Three, though, is our cultural norm, our default. Three wise men, I came, I saw, I conquered. Three little pigs, I could go on and on with the three musketeers. It's just, we default to three. So undergird that big idea with three key points, and then also ensure that they're balanced, given the same weight, the same heft, the same length, the same style, individually and work together to move that big idea forward, right? So, you know, Dr. Waldinger's first key point was, you know, our social connections are really good for us, right? Supports the big idea. The good life is made with good relationships. Oh, social connections. Healthy social connections are good relationships. The second key point was our close relationships matter most. That's our spouse, our kids, our children, our fellow siblings. Now, notice how those two individually hold up the big idea, but they also lock and move it forward to his third point, which is good relationships protect our health and our brains, right? Turns out cognition in later in life is higher, and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's are less likely to be a norm if a man leans into relationships as opposed to withdraws from them and isolates. Fascinating stuff. I digress, but big idea, three key points. And then the third element that goes into a clearly focused message in the TED style is we then take that content and hang it on the very minimalistic standard TED outline, which means a lot of stuff, you know, that curse of knowledge, a lot of stuff flutters to the floor. There's just not a hook to hold it in the 15-minute talk. And that exercise, I'm sure editors experience this all the time with their writers, that exercise tightens and hones and focuses that message all the more.
You know, there was one word I was thinking of through this whole entire thing. What's thesaurus. That?
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that comes in handy. Absolutely. Well,
you know, as a publisher, I must admit, editing is my weakest skill, but because I've not only done all of my own books, but when I was first starting the publishing, I did pretty well everybody's, most things on everybody's books. Okay. I have learned the power of the thesaurus and yes. how a thesaurus can take four words down to one.
And it stimulates ideas that probably weren't there as well. So, you know, I just pulled up the five because I don't want to just wing it. The way I want a non-TED speaker to think of, and this is key on for authors, and I think it's important for authors to think, huh, I'm not doing the TED Talk necessarily, although that can really help a book. I'm going to give a TED-style keynote at the National Association of Fill in the Blank. I'm going to give a TED-style presentation at the next author signing at the library or the bookstore. You're on the circuit pushing that book. That should be a fully sculpted presentation, and then you can thumb through and start reading passages and take Q&A. But if you make the most efficient use of those 10 minutes or 15 minutes, that's the presentation. Far too many authors kind of stumble, rumble, grumble through that presentation. And a way I can sum this up visually for everyone is if you're going to give a presentation, that TED outline, we want you to picture, if you will, in your mind, a temple, right? An Athenian temple with that arched roof. And okay, so the arched roof is the big idea, the through line, the thread. The three columns support it. And just like in architecture, we need those columns to be the same height, the same width, the same density. So too, the key point set. And then third is there's a call to action, an action-igniting series of steps out of the temple that are small but doable. It's not boil the whale, boil the ocean, save the whales, remove all the plastic from the ozone layer or whatnot. It's instead walk up to the water's edge, holding hands with your child, and pick up a piece of plastic. Invite them to pick up a piece of plastic and repeat it. And as that's taking place, somebody down the shoreline is going to see you picking up trash, and they may be inspired to do the same. Now, what I've just described is a call to action that's repeatable, shareable, spreadable, even perhaps habit-forming. Two other features on the message temple. You need a doorway in, you need a doorway out. That's a story, a personal story in, personal story out. Or perhaps it's an opening of the story, and at the end, you close the story doorway. And then you exit. Well, of course, the call to action for, you know, an author's audience is one, obviously, buy the book. But even more interesting is share the book, right? So that message template, if you will. The fourth is, now, in the same context, we don't use PowerPoint in the land of TED. That's one way we focus the audience's attention. Not on an image with seven bullet points, which have seven words that are fluttering, underlined, italicized, bold, and colored even. No, a simple, clean image alone. And if an image alone won't do it, a phrase. And that's it. So fewer than seven words total, right? On average, in the old day, the average slide has 40 words on it. And it's just, you can't process it, right? So some of the best TEDsters, either A, don't have a presentation. Think Brené Brown. There's no deck there. Think Sir Ken Robinson. No deck was there. Or they have a minimalistic one that's image only with phrasing. That was Dr. Waldinger's presentation. And then the fifth way to focus the message in the TED style is what I call highway safety, right? Now, this is a little picture you're driving along. You're the author, you're the speaker, and you're driving along in the minivan, right? And as you drive that minivan, your audience is in the back. Now, you're along the highway, boom, boom, you just hit a speed bump. That's something controversial in your presentation that the audience goes, oh, I disagree. I don't like that. Let me think about that. Do I agree? They stop listening to you and they start an internal dialogue arguing with you. Right? So we want to smooth out the speed bump. is a pothole, right? And that's where in your presence.
Oh, I live in Canada. I know about potholes.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that's true. In your presentation, there's acronyms, there's jargon, there's dense content that the audience just doesn't understand, but you're driving forward and they're lost, right? Another image that's helpful for streamlining, focusing the message, is to cut down all the billboards on that highway. Now, the billboards are distractions, right? You mentioned an elephant. You didn't need to. You could have picked another animal, but that elephant is, you know, something that draws an audience in another direction. Oh, I remember when Uncle Roscoe went on safari. He came back with an elephant-shaped garbage can out of a foot. We have a tusk in the front. Should we keep that tusk? People just rabbit trail if you give them an excuse, right?
I wonder what the elephant in the room is.
Yeah, there's that too. Well done. So those are your five ways that we, the five folds, if you will, of focusing a message. The big idea, a singular big idea, three key points, the message temple, PowerPoint free, and highway safety.
Oh man, we are just about out of time. We could do such a deep dive into these topics, but we are not going to today. So audience, if you want to find out more at the end of the episode, Devin's going to tell you how you can connect with him. But we're going to shift gears here because I want to make sure we save time to ask you the question that we ask every person who comes on the show who is not an author. So are you ready, Devin?
I am.
Okay. If you were to write a book to build your business, what would you write about?
It, you know, this is perfect dovetail with, you know, the next point in this conversation. It would be about storytelling, right? I reference wrapping your message in story.
Yes.
So too, what form of story? I call it sticky storytelling, right? We want that story to stick, be memorable. And how do we do that? We make it clean and easy and pithy and smooth, as we talked about. There's a structure, right, to a sticky message. There's a connecting element. S-T-I-C-K-Y is actually an acronym, right? And so we want to only share sticky stories that are disciplined to elicit, to connect with the audience and compel them to take action.
I love it. Love it. Love it. I have worked on my story. I continue to work on my story. And as I learn more, I continue to refine the story. But I had chosen for my story, and there's obviously different variations of for different situations, but my story is the power of words. And how I went from being told at 7 years old that I shouldn't write because I wasn't a good writer to owning a publishing company.
Go figure. There's a rich story bed right there.
So if you were to write a book about storytelling, what would be one of the goals for the book for you?
Well, you know, that the book, like a TED Talk, the better TED Talks, not the hundreds of thousands that are walling away on YouTube in the graveyard, you know, because they broke some of these rules. But the most potent TED Talks are idea spreading and action igniting, right? And so what practical, actionable step can I take when I finish the story on texture, right, in my storytelling? We just wrapped up the course, Sticky Storytelling, or Sticky Stories. And the actionable homework, but also things that you can apply to every story you tell going forward is one of those goals. I want that to be clear.
Yeah. Nice. So I'll just share with you quickly. The first time I got to tell my story, and this forced me to really refine it, is locally where I lived in Ontario, we had something that was being started called Talk 11. And it was just an opportunity for local people to share their story in 11 minutes on a stage.
Uh-huh. That's pretty pressure inducing.
Yeah. But you know what? I loved the challenge. And it took me quite a bit. I mean, I worked on this thing forever to distill the story down to its essential elements in 11 minutes, including, you know, emotional response, a little bit of humor here and there, you know, at the time, I didn't have a strong call to action, but I did want to give them something that they could take away.
Right.
And then, like, before you even got on the stage, you had to go through this whole process with the team that was doing these events, and you had to present it to them. And I was so glad I did that, because now, I mean, don't get me wrong, I already know that I've got to refine that story again. I've been doing it a bit, and I'm like, yeah, it needs some revision. But I can now do that story anywhere from 1 minute to 15 minutes.
Wow, that's a powerful tool to have in your bag, isn't it?
It is, because, you know, when I go, someplace, sometimes people ask me about my story. And, you know, depending on the length of time, I can share that. But part of, you know, that story also is part of my messaging, right? Mm-hmm. Because as an entrepreneur, it's not just my story. It's the story about who I am professionally. I mean, I have lots of stories in my life.
Right.
I did Toastmasters for about 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And you get to tell stories from your life. And I did a speech competition on Captain Patience and his sidekick Gullible Girl, aka me and my dad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of stories you can tell in your life. But I think, you know, one of the things I teach about in terms of, you know, writing your book is you have to have that professional story.
Mm-hmm.
That story that, you know, you tell in that professional setting, not the story about, you know, when you're 5 years old and you're learning how to ride a bike and you fall off and your mom kisses you, right? Well, yeah. Great story, but, you know, you have to have that professional story as part of who you are, and you have to be able to tell that story. And so I'm so glad you came on today, Devin, because this has been such a wonderful episode. And, oh, man, you're coming back, because I think there's just more.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be fun. You know, something I just wrote down that you sparked for me. You know, the other thing that's useful in that story you share, whether 1 minute or 5 minutes, 11 minutes, is it's important to consider the retellability of the story. And the story is going to die, or it's going to be retold, and you want it to be retold in a way that's true to the intention. And, you know, that retellability is so much a part of TED, and its best practices. And so as your authors think about the way that they're sharing the story of their book, right, distilling that down so that it's sticky and it's focused and it leads to action that is, you know, repeatable, shareable, acceptable, is so very important. So, you know, tell stories, tell them sticky.
Devin, we got about a minute or so left. Can you share a quick final thought? And for those of you, or those of the audience that are going, I got to connect with this person, how could they get hold of you?
Oh, yeah. I tell you what I can do is share, not my website, but let me share a URL that will connect us. Connect to compel, and that's T-O, connecttocompelnow.com. And what will be there is a tool that you can download that continues this conversation. It actually takes the three principles we touched on, clearly focused, story wrapped, and action igniting. And what it does most interestingly is it pairs each of those three principles with three separate TED Talks. So you can see this play out, and that should be stimulating, and hopefully, you know, feel free to reach out.
Thanks so much, Devin. It has been an honor and a pleasure having you on the show today.
It's a joy, and I hope it warms up in your neck of the woods pretty soon.
Today's pretty good.
We got sunshine. They start showing in those potholes.
Audience, if you're wondering where to go next, I'd like to direct you back to episode 445, How to Sell More with Story. If you're on YouTube, you know that my daughter has placed the thumbnail somewhere on this screen for you to click on. And if you're on your favorite podcast app, you are going to be scanning back about 60 episodes. But this is another great episode on storytelling and how to use it in your business. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you on the very next episode. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Author to Authority podcast. The Extraordinary Word Ninja, Kim Thompson Pinder,
has helped over 200 entrepreneurs, professionals, speakers, and coaches write and publish their books that have become incredible marketing tools for their business. And many of those have gone on to become Amazon best-selling authors and have used their books to land high-level clients and get on big stages. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at www.author2authoritypodcast.com. See you next time.